Well, it's been a very odd couple of weeks. Bill arrived home on December 22nd after a week in Florida and then a week in California umpiring table tennis tournaments. And we spent the day together, and then he tested positive for COVID that night. So we isolated in different parts of the house, and we had to cancel all our Christmas plans. We're actually going to my family's this next Sunday for Christmas, so we still have presents stacked up in our living room. It made preparation for this service a little bit difficult. We're texting each other in different parts of the house, coordinating our stories, and when we finally did practice, he was way over on one side of the great room, and I was way over in the kitchen, and we both had our masks on, and so he wasn't very sick. Well, a couple days he was pretty sick, but he's much, much better, and I continue to test negative, so which is kind of amazing that, yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, we tried really hard, and I didn't catch it, so that was that was really good. So our goal was to bring some stories that would be inspirational for new beginnings for the new year, and it really didn't come together exactly as we planned, but I just trust that God's Spirit will put it together in your head and make it all make sense. I'm having a little trouble seeing my music, too, so, you know, it's a new thing. We'll just see what happens.
So if I seem a little standoffish, it's that, you know, I'm still a little anxious about having had COVID and not wanting to get too close to anybody. That, and I'm an introvert, so, you know, it's a good excuse. Now, this story, I'm not sure if it happened exactly this way or not. I didn't write this. This is a story by Patrick Day.
He says it did.
But I know the story's true. So. It started out with good intentions. My wife and I were living in southern Florida, and I volunteered through my company to fill the Christmas wish list of a single 18-year-old mother coming out of the foster care program. And then, as a second stab at good karma, I also volunteered to play Santa at the party for all the kids in the foster care program. I went to pick up the Santa outfit at the home of the woman who owned it. The only way to describe the aroma in the house was Lucky Strike incense, or maybe the wrong kind of camels at the manger. I got the suit in the car and immediately had to open all the windows because of the smoke-laden Santa outfit. It was supposed to have been dry cleaned after last year, but it doesn't really matter when you store it in a smokehouse. I picked up an extra bottle of Febreze and swamped the suit with it and stuck it in the dryer. Meanwhile, my wife Ann was wrapping the gifts that my company provided for our 18-year-old gift recipient named Jewel. Sometimes people just don't realize that gift giving needs to be thought out. She's wrapping all the gifts that were provided when she comes upon a set of large wine goblets and a set of shot glasses for an 18-year-old single new mom fresh out of foster care. Perhaps she can use these when she has the Department of Children and Families representative over for a wine tasting and shots of Sambuca. In the same box is a set of demitasse cups with saucers. I guess after the wine tasting, she can fire up the espresso machine. Ann spent 3 hours rapidly wrapping gifts so we could make the 3:30 start of the party. I stuffed the still stinky suit into a bag to change into at the last possible minute, and off we went. The party was a Christmas party for kids in foster care, but especially honoring the 18-year-olds coming out of the foster care program. It included a turkey dinner, gifts for the special honorees, and gifts for the younger kids to be handed out by the Marlboro Santa. Naturally, the party had to have music, which was graciously provided by Daddy G, a real rocking DJ in his 70s. I'm getting close to that myself. I assume the G was an abbreviation for geezer. I can say that. We heard from one of the other lucky attendees that Daddy G had to break an engagement at the Italian American Club to play for us. When we arrived, Daddy G had all the kids rocking to Perry Como, or really kind of glued in their seats to Perry Como. The party really got moving when a ballroom dance exhibition was provided by dancers from a local octogenarian dance club. The youngsters were mesmerized by the stylish ballroom dancing to the velvet tones of Mel Torme. At the end of the exhibition, the girls and boys were informed that for $5 they could come and get group lessons. Oh, we could see these young people fresh out of foster care wanting to explore the exciting world of ballroom dancing. I think that's why they were all on their cell phones making the arrangements. Meanwhile, the food was being prepared, but taking forever. Everyone was getting hungry, and the kids started raiding the dessert table, which was already set up before dinner was served. Soon-to-be Santa was getting very nervous about watching this group of kids feeding on cake and brownies and soda, and there was a pack mentality taking over as the boys were stealing ornaments off the tree and throwing them at each other. I thought, hopefully it's time for dinner soon. Wait, no, we have another volunteer, a voice teacher who has brought three kids with her to entertain us with her rendering of I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, something else that kids in foster care can really relate to. However, we're now introduced to one of her own songs, which is track number 5 on her latest CD, which we can purchase after the show. The opening lines of the song are compassion, hell, heartbreak, pain, shine a light. Huh. I'm checking my pocket to make sure I have cash for the CD. Next, she announces that her young choir will have to help her sing her next song, number 7 on the CD, because she has a lung condition. Now, please remember, this is a true story. The food is still not being served, and it's now approaching 7 o'clock. The kids are playing dodgeball with the ornaments, and soon-to-be Santa is checking out an app on his cell phone for the nearest bar. But the arrival of the Magi has caught our attention. Three teen girls have arrived in sleek red spandex Christmas dresses that are incredibly tight and wearing 6-inch heels. My wife tells me that they are the three Magi, and the Bible says they are the precursor to the serving of the dinner. But wait, no. Daddy G announces that as a Christmas tradition, we have to get in a circle to do a special song. It takes 10 minutes to get everyone in the circle, and he finally announces that we're going to sing that special Christmas carol by Lee Greenwood, I'm Proud to Be an American. This is the God's honest truth. We are all so proud. My wife's interpretation of the Bible and the arrival of the Magi is correct. After the old white people are finished singing how proud we are to be Americans, Daddy G announces that dinner is served. The people that cook the dinner are seraphims or whatever level of heavenly angels are responsible for the preparation of food. The food is excellent, as attested to by the Magi's 3 trips through the food line. Since dessert was already served before dinner, it should not be long before Santa has to make his appearance. Santa is scoping out areas where he can get prepared. The restroom does not seem appropriate because the soda has kicked in and the kids are running in and out. I ask what time Santa should make his appearance. I'm told 10 minutes. 10 minutes go by. I'm told 10 more minutes. 10 minutes goes by and people are leaving, and I'm told 5 more minutes. I think it's going to take me 5 minutes to get ready, so after looking around, I find the only room available is the restroom, so I sneak the Santa outfit into the handicap stall and start dressing. The pants are double my size and have no adjustment. I wrap my street pants around my waist to add some width. Then I tie the shirt I was wearing around my waist. I sweat a lot. This Santa suit is made of velveteen, and it's a nice 80 degrees in Southwest Florida. Now I've wrapped all my other clothes around my waist to add thickness. I look like someone has hooked a sprinkler hose to my forehead. Now it's time to put on the beard and hair. I look in the bag and they are not there. I look on the floor and suddenly realize they are floating in the toilet bowl. I'm at the point of no return and have to apply the 15-second rule. This rule has a not so well-known caveat for dropping things in toilets. Plus, this is the wheelchair accessible toilet and there's only one person using a wheelchair. What are the odds? It's amazing how you can talk yourself into things, but what's more amazing is how the wet beard and hat really cooled Santa off for a few minutes. As I walked out of the stall, I saw a line of boys waiting for their turn to use the bathroom. They stared at Santa, so I informed them it was a long trip from the North Pole and Santa had to use the facilities. Then I waddled out into the heat and found that kids do not care that Santa sweats, has a wet beard and hair, his hat is too tight and falls off, has a belt that's way too big, smells like the Marlboro Man, and his glasses are completely steamed up and he can't see. Santa requests Daddy G to play "It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year." There are bags next to the chair with kids' names on them, and rather than hold up the bag and call the kids' names out, Santa's assistant is putting kids in Santa's lap and asking them their names and trying to find their bags. Of course, most of the kids have not registered, so there are no bags for them. Or the kids are there and the sugar's worn off and now they're asleep. Or they have such unfamiliar names that Santa's assistant has no clue to what the kids are saying when they give their names. Meanwhile, the strap holding the beard on becomes undone, and my wife is holding the beard on my face. Years later, I imagine kids will want to know why there's a hand in front of Santa's face in their childhood pictures. Maybe they'll hear this story. A small girl comes back and hands Santa her small doll and says, "Santa, I want a kitchen set." Santa tells her that she might be getting a kitchen set on Christmas, but only if she's been a good girl. I'm sure there will be ramifications in the future about this. A mentally challenged girl approaches and Santa's assistant asks her name and she says, "Santa knows my name." Santa realizes he's in a jam and then something incredible happens. He hears the glorious tone of his wife's voice whispering in his ear, "Her name is Eleanor." I say, "Eleanor, you've been wonderful this year and Santa has a gift for you," not knowing that Eleanor is the daughter of one of the volunteers and there is no gift for Eleanor. I cannot see anything now as the glasses are so steamed up and the sweat's running into my eyes. The kids at the table across from me are saying Santa is melting. Finally, some angel from heaven announces that Santa has to leave, and as I get up to go and wish everyone a Merry Christmas, I realize no one is even paying attention because they're all playing with their toys. I sneak back into the bathroom and pull the wet Santa suit off and unwrap my street clothes, which are now completely soaked. I realize I have to put these soaking wet clothes back on. I put the street clothes under the hand dryer in the bathroom while standing in my Santa pants, holding the bathroom door closed with my foot so no one can come in. Will this please end? At last, the clothes dry enough. I put them back on. We go outside to give Jewel her gifts. The entire back seat and trunk of my car are filled with gifts, and she is moved beyond words. There is not enough room in her car, so we agree to follow her to her new apartment where we deliver them. She is so thankful and loving, and her six-week-old baby is so alert and adorable, and we realize that we are incredibly blessed to be a part of this. Afterward, when I returned the Santa suit to Mrs. Nicotine, she informed me that she had many opportunities for me to play Santa at $90 a gig, and I said to her, "You've got to be kidding." Now, there's a good chance I will play Santa again, but you couldn't pay me enough to do it for the money. There are some jobs, some acts of service that we do because there is a need to fill and because we're able to fill it. I volunteer because I can. And I just happen to have a certain look that makes me a good Santa. And I've discovered that there can be all kinds of wonderful rewards in serving others, but sometimes there can be sacrifice as well. In any event, we gain life experiences and these nearly unbelievable stories with which to entertain others.
Christmas begins. hungry to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among neighbors, to make when the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
The Christmas story and New Year, really, is about birth and about rebirth, the birth of the baby Jesus and the rebirth of the hope of salvation, of peace, love, joy, and unity. And the fact that our celebration of Christmas falls over the New Year sort of emphasizes that theme of rebirth. We are looking and saying goodbye to a past year and looking ahead to another year of life, another year of new dreams and plans for the future. I know that stories of any kind of birth or new beginning involve certain elements of pain and struggle. On December 21st, 21 years ago, our friends Amelia and Tom, another clergy couple, were rushing to get back to Asheville, where they were living at the time, because Amelia had gone into labor. And she writes this: "Under a clear sky and an almost full moon, I labored hard while wearing a seatbelt in the car for the hour-long drive. We were about the only car on I-40, as it was mostly trucks on the road at midnight. My water broke along the way, and we stopped by the side of the road to adjust the towels in the car. It was a difficult and painful ride, and I had Tom call out the highway exit numbers as we passed, both as a distraction and an encouragement as we hurried along. Thankfully, we got to the hospital in time for me to give birth to our baby girl on that morning of the solstice, December 21st. It's a little chaotic for two pastors to add a baby and the subsequent years of birthday celebrations to their Christmas week, but we wouldn't have it any other way. It's the only way that we know how to celebrate." And the baby girl is now a junior in college and publishing her own research and looking at graduate schools, and continues to be a source of celebration. So new beginnings of all kinds are born of challenges and hard work. The message of Christmas and New Year call us to new possibilities for service and for new celebration. The text in Revelation speaks of God making all things new, and this helps to answer our questions that we have about brokenness and injustice and violence in the world. God is making all things new. These things are temporary, but God is making a time, a place, a space, a reality beyond tears, beyond death, beyond pain and separation. It also gives us inspiration and courage to look for what's new, what's good, what's possible, and to add whatever we can to make the world a better place. Last week, I saw on the news, they had a story following up on the fire that happened at the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. And suddenly, in this huge, vast space, you can see new life happening as hundreds of craftspeople work to bring back the beauty in this space. That fire was 3.5 years ago, and they are planning to have the spire, the new one, rise sometime this year. And the goal is to have the cathedral open to the public by Christmas Eve midnight mass in 2024. Now, on your bulletin cover is a picture from the Christian Church of Arlington Heights, Disciples of Christ in Illinois. And this didn't make the local, you know, the national or the international news. So I thought, you know, I would bring this little tidbit to you. So the fire at that church took place on December 6, 2020. And emergency personnel were called because of an alarm about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was a very difficult fire to fight. They immediately had 2 hose lines going, and they still had this black and brown smoke, and they couldn't figure out where it came from. So they were putting holes in the roof, which was difficult. The roof above the sanctuary is very steep, and one of the firefighters fell, and at the last minute, 2 other caught him. So that was great. It took about an hour for the firefighters from 5 different communities to get the fire under control. And it was later discovered that the cause was from a candle that was left burning. And now, many things in that church have come from the ashes. The picture on the front of the mosaic chalice, it was put together from communion ware that was salvaged from the rubble. The pulpit itself from charred wood. They were able to restore and refinish the piano and also a viola that got caught in the fire. They did have to get rid of the carpet, which was ruined, and their pews, but they took the opportunity to put in more accessible wood floors and movable chairs. The entire church building is full of symbols of rebirth and new life. And in addition, the community has also experienced transformation as people from these different communities have worked together to rebuild and restore the church. There's a spiritual practice that I read about in the book Simple Abundance, where you have a pretend fire at your house. It's a way to deal with clutter, an overabundance of things, and the problem of the difficulty and time-consuming decision-making process when we think about trying to pare down our many possessions. And one woman told of her experience. She had 3 of her friends come over when she was out for the day and have a fake fire. So when she got home that night, there were a lot of things that were gone. They took some furniture, they took clothes, they took all sorts of things. She was very curious about what they took and what they didn't take. But mostly she had a sense of relief and a sense of freedom. And most of the things she never missed at all. She said that she subsequently had lunch with one of the women and she was wearing one of her favorite sweaters. She said that was the only time she had just a little twinge of regret. But that mostly it was a very freeing process, and it gave her new hope, more space, and renewed creativity. My hope is that You all can experience renewal and hope and rebirth in the new year. And if you want me to come over to your house and give a fire, just let me know. I have a song to share that speaks of the goodness of the new year. It is an Israeli song, and the beginning is in Hebrew. And Bill, I'm going to ask you to come provide extra light for this song. But the words that are not translated in the English just speak of the blessing of being able to relax on the porch, to count the migrating birds, to have fresh grapes harvested, brought chilled to the table. Good things in the new year. Yeah, over here. Okay. See this? That'll give me that top part right there. Do what we can. But you want to make sure it's not in my eyes. Yes, there you go. Bashana haba'a, bashana haba'a, bashana haba'a, neshev el hamir peset, venisbur tziburim nodedot, iladim ashota, Sasha Koto Fesset Ben Arayit Lavin Hasadot O Tire Kamatovie Bashana Bashana Haba O Tire Kamatovie Bashana Bashana Haba New Year, welcome in and sing a song of gladness for the fields, for the birds, for the sky, for the children at play. We count our many blessings for the promise of hope New Year brings. You will see just how good it will be. You will live in harmony this new year. You will see just how good it will be. You will live in harmony this new year. O tire, kamatovie, bashana, bashana, hava.
Judah is a member of the Southern Songwriters Association, and I went with her to a gathering they had at a place with the interesting name Olive's Mud Puddle down in Fort Mill. Sometime last fall, I think it was, we went there, and toward the end of the gathering, I heard this song, which just stunned me with its depth of understanding and the power of its portrayal of transformation. And I thought it's probably the best sermon I've ever heard and ever likely to hear on the passage about being worth many sparrows. And I can't sing it for you. I don't know the tune, but I want to recite the words for you as a story of transformation. She slips out the back door, quiet as she can, careful not to let the screen door slam. She's holding little Cecil to her chest. His daddy should sleep it off for a good while yet. She's got to get down to the quick stop, 'cause when he wakes, if she ain't got his camels and his rolling rock, he'll come at them again. She walks home down the dirt road. Then she hears the rush of the mountain stream of her happy years. She listens for a moment, then she climbs down the path. She sets Cecil and the groceries in the soft green grass. She sits down on the flat rock, takes off her socks and shoes, and sees her face with all the marks and splashes it away. And a sparrow flies overhead. And she remembers the verse her mama read. No sparrow so small ever leaves the Creator's eye, and you are more precious than all the sparrows in the sky. She tosses an oak leaf into the stream. It cascades towards the ocean she's never seen. It gets captured by the branches of a fallen tree, and she runs out stone to stone and sets it free. She prays it to the creek bend, gets Cecil and kisses him, and climbs back to the road, and then turns away from home. And the sparrows fly overhead. And she remembers the verse her mama read. No sparrow so small ever leaves the Creator's eye, and you are more precious than all the sparrows in the sky. Six towns and four shelters and 7 weeks. She stands in the ocean, and Cecil sleeps. She's got a key in her pocket and a job at the grill. The sun warms a pretty face that's almost healed. A touch calls her gently, and she looks down to see the remnant of an oak leaf that floats against her leg, and the sparrows fly overhead.
In the Methodist tradition, there is, at the New Year, a service of covenant renewal, and there's a hymn associated with it, Come Let Us Use the Grace Divine, that we're not going to sing today, but...
We're not going to sing it?
But we are going to do the prayer associated with it, is a prayer of covenant renewal.
We'll pass on that, okay, all right. Okay. So we have a prayer of covenant renewal that is here in the bulletin. If you will join me in this prayer. Loving God, I am not alone, adrift in the universe, but I am yours, your creation, your child. I trust in your love and wisdom. So make me into who I am to be. Put me to doing. Put me to challenges. Let me be employed for you or laid aside for you, exalted for you or brought low for you. Let me be full. Let me be empty. Let me have all things. Let me have nothing. I freely and heartily yield all things to you. Holy God, I am yours and you are mine. So be it. And the covenant which I have made on earth, let it be ratified in heaven. Amen.